might have just seen one of the biggest weekends of college football we've seen in a long time. And I, Austin Price, am here to talk you through all of it right here on the College Try Podcast, as I do every week, every Tuesday night. And right here, brought to you by ESPN Pensacola, 99.1 FM, 1330 AM. You can go to our website at ESPNPensacola.com and find the College Try, along with other local podcasts, on your local podcast page. Hey, how about that? All righty. As I said, loaded weekend. And really, if you did not, let's say you didn't watch any college football. Let's say you had a busy weekend, didn't watch anything. Just a quick glance at the AP top 10 will tell you all you need to know, starting with the top ranked team, Texas. And you're like, oh, okay, well, maybe Texas just looked really good. No, I believe they were on a bye week. So it had nothing to do with that. Oh, well, maybe Alabama just kind of struggled with Vandy more than they should have, right? No, they lost. Alabama, you heard that right, lost to Vanderbilt for the first time in 40 years. We'll touch on that in a moment. But yeah, so Texas, number one, that should just give you an idea of what all mayhem happened this last week. That's followed by number two, Ohio State, number three, Oregon, number four, Penn State, number five, Georgia, number six, Miami, number seven, Alabama, number eight, Tennessee, number nine, Ole Miss, and surprisingly enough, number 10, Clemson. They started the season not even ranked in the top 10. They get dismantled by Georgia 34-3 on a neutral site to start the year, and everybody just looks at them, laughs, and keeps on going. Well, Clemson's back in the top 10. And then once you get outside of Clemson, you start running into like the Iowa States of the world, and it's like, okay. I'm just going to go ahead and say it because there's no soft way for me to say it. The AP poll lost a lot of meaning after this last weekend. That is not a knock on AP voters. That's not a knock on anyone in particular. It's just the facts. We had five top 11 teams lose this last weekend. We had Alabama, number one. They lost to Vandy. We had Tennessee, number four, lose to Arkansas. We had, who else was it? Missouri, number nine. They got dismantled by Texas A&M. We'll touch on that a bit more later. And then we had number 10, Michigan, and number 11, USC. What did I say? I said upset alert. Well, both of those teams lost to Washington and Minnesota, respectively. So five of the top 11, first time in years that has happened. And it just brings me to this realization that, man, you know, Texas is number one. Ohio State's number two. They haven't beaten anybody. Texas beat Michigan on the road, and you beat them bad. Great. Congratulations. I'm not saying that doesn't mean anything, but especially now, Michigan's showing their limits as a program. They had been for weeks, and they just got completely exposed, losing by double digits to the Huskies. And Ohio State? Who's their toughest opponent? Who's Ohio State's toughest opponent so far? Michigan State? An unranked Iowa? Who is it? They haven't played anyone. So when the top couple of teams haven't played anybody, Oregon's best win, Boise State. They beat a top 20 Boise State, and they had to kick a tie-breaking field goal to do it. These are teams that have not beaten anyone of merit. And then when you start getting past the top four, you got Georgia. They have a loss. You got Miami. They had to squeak past Cal. They were down by 25. They had to come back and win by one with like under a minute to go. You got Alabama, who just got exposed. Tennessee got exposed. Ole Miss got exposed by Kentucky. Clemson got exposed by Georgia. There's your top 10. It's just not. Oh, and I skipped over number four, Penn State. I didn't even mention them because they haven't looked impressive either. They beat UCLA. Congratulations. LSU beat them better than you did. Indiana beat them better than you did. We're not forgetting that you struggled with Bowling Green, yada, yada, yada. So all of these teams are either, hey, they look good, but they've played schmucks, or they've been exposed as losers / potential losers. And that's your top 10. Then, as I said, you get out of the top 10 and you stumble across somebody like Iowa State. You're like, what the heck are we doing here? So it's not a knock on the voters when I say that the AP poll has lost meaning. A lot of people would argue that it never has meaning. when you consider the playoff poll and how much weight that holds in the latter half of the year. But wow, the AP just, you can't tell me that you look at Penn State and think, ooh, a contender. There's no way you think that. What have they done to earn that? What's Clemson done to prove that they're a contender? What's Ole Miss done to prove that they're a contender? These are all top 10 teams. I look at this and I'm like, okay, these are just guys that are doing good right now. And people will argue, oh, it's still early. There's still a lot of time left. I get that, but we're halfway through the year. A lot of these teams have played 6 games already. I mean, we are officially halfway through the season. I don't know. Typically, I don't try to hang on to every little thing about the AP poll, but I'm not getting anything of substance here. I assure you, several of these teams that we're seeing float around, either in the top 10 or just outside the top 10, they won't be there once the other half of this season has concluded. But either way, we need to touch on the Bama-Vandy situation, because I've already been yapping for several minutes. So I just want to, first of all, say congratulations to Vandy. I mean, as I said earlier, first win over the Tide in 40 years. Going into this game, I don't think you had even broken 10 on the Tide in the 21st century. I want to say I saw a stat like that. You had been outscored in your last 3 matchups with them, 148-3, if my memory serves me. I thought you were going to lose this game 48-17. And I thought you were going to be happy with that. I'm like, hey, they scored 17 points. Good for them. It's not 59-3 like what we're used to seeing. It's 48-17. Congrats, Vandy. You're moving up. That's what I thought we were going to be talking about after last weekend. Vandy goes in there, outgains Alabama, has the ball for 42 minutes, and never trailed. Scored 40 points on the Tide. Just phenomenal. A historic win for Vandy. Literally, they had never beaten a top 5 opponent, and they just beat a number 1 opponent. And it's a blue blood. And it's a historic loss for Bama. And what a lot of people are saying is that this is the post-Saban reality, right? We looked at Alabama after Saban left and we're like, I think you had fans that were afraid of a drop-off and you had haters that were praying for one. But either way, you had people humoring that Bama was just going to all of a sudden collapse and be terrible at football forever and ever. And that's just not going to happen. The best way I can describe it is that Bama's success has hit Seinfeld levels of syndication. This team, there is no immediate plan for a drop-off. There's no immediate collapse anywhere in sight for the foreseeable future. There's nothing that even points to that. When you are Alabama, I mean, the attraction, the brand, the recruiting, the money, all of it, it functions on its own. It's self-sustaining at this point with what Saban left behind. Kalen DeBoer just has to be there and be a decent coach, or so we thought. Because decent coaching didn't help him. And you know why? Because the problem with DeBoer is that he's not Nick Saban. And you may think, well, no duh, Austin. Nick Saban's the greatest head coach of all time. Yes, he is. And DeBoer will never have his legacy. But I'm talking about the coaching that you don't see on the scoreboard. I'm talking about the coaching that you don't see in the win column and the loss column. I'm talking about the coaching that you don't see when your players are hoisting up national title trophies. I'm talking about the coaching that we used to laugh at Saban for. When we see Saban flipping his lid on the sideline because, you're not set in the right defensive formation. There's 52 seconds to go. You're up by 45 points against Southeast Talladega Central. And Saban's red in the face. He's losing it. And we're just like, Nick, relax. Right? You're winning. This game was unlosable. You dominated. What does it take to please you? But that's the thing. Nothing pleased Saban. He wanted perfection from start to finish. It didn't matter where you were. It didn't matter who you were playing. It didn't matter how much time was left. It didn't matter what the score was. And that's why people look at this game and say, Saban wouldn't have lost that. We gave Georgia credit a couple weeks back. They were down 28-0. They took a 34-33 lead. And we were like, oh, Georgia, they're just so cool-headed under pressure. That's what everybody was saying. And that's true. But especially now, we have to look at Bama and say, Georgia didn't make a comeback. You blew a lead. That's what you did. Georgia doesn't make that comeback on Saban's Alabama. Does not happen. Does not. Saban doesn't blow 28-0 leads. He doesn't have a lead like that and then find himself losing in the fourth quarter. That doesn't happen. Not with Saban. Saban doesn't give up 40 points to Vanderbilt because he's riding high after a big win and trips over some weakling. No. Oh, but Austin Vandy's just great, okay? Just stop hating on Bama, Austin. Vandy's really good. Shut up, you dork. That is not true. Have you looked around on social media? That's the narrative that people are starting to spin. Oh, Vandy's really good this year. No, they're not. That's the problem. They're not. What have they done? Tell me, if you think Vandy's great, and if you've been saying it all along, oh, they're dogs, what have they done to prove it? Going into that Bama game, what have they done to prove it? They beat up on Vatek. Rutgers beat Vatek better than Vandy did. What's your point? Vatek is one of the most disappointing teams in the nation, perhaps not named Florida State. Oh, and then Vandy beat up on Alcorn State. Yeah, put me at QB, and I'll drop 30 on them at least. Come on, what are we doing here? Alcorn State? Got to give me something else. Oh, remember that game against Georgia State? Yeah, the one you lost. You think that Vandy's some great team? They're out here losing to Sunbelt schools. I root for Wake Forest. They do that. Where's our praise? We even wear black and gold, too. Where's the love for Wake? Oh, wait a minute. All of a sudden, losing to Sunbelt teams isn't cool anymore. And then you almost beat Missouri. Almost. But we have since figured out that Missouri is far faker than we even originally thought. So that close loss, that quality loss, doesn't even mean as much as we thought it did. Vandy entered this game 2-2 with a loss to a Sunbelt school. Do not try to sit here and tell me that they're all of a sudden great. Diego Pavia is an outstanding dual threat QB. And Vandy outplayed Bama. No one's denying that. And of course they're better than the 2-10 Commodores we saw last year. Of course they are. But this narrative that all of a sudden Vandy's good, it's a preamble to giving Bama a pass for losing. And I'm not going to do that. Have you looked at Vandy's schedule? They got to go to Kentucky this week. I have them losing that game. They play number one Texas. Believe it or not, I got them losing that one too. They can beat up on Ball State, whatever. But they got to go to Auburn. Auburn, better built team, physical defense, and you're in Jordan Hare. That's a loss, potentially. You host South Carolina. I think you can beat South Carolina. I'll give you that. But you end the season going to LSU and hosting top eight Tennessee. Oh, go ahead, Vandy. Show us how great you are. You got one quality win. Show us how great you are with that remaining schedule. No, they're winning six games at most. At most. Good year by their standard, but not we're going to beat Bama good. If Vandy were as good as people were trying to pretend, this game would have been 42-14. Vandy had the ball for 42 out of 60 minutes, and they won by five. That should tell you all you need to know. Jalen Milroe. He only carried the ball seven times for 10 yards officially. There was a tipped pick six. Vandy started up 13-0. There was a fumble late in the game that set Vandy up to win. And through all of these mistakes, through the big lead to start the game and yada, 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 through the statistical lacklusterness, through all of it, Vandy won a shootout, 40-35. If you were as great as people are pretending, you would have dominated that game on the scoreboard. You didn't. So let's hold Bama accountable, please. And let's just say, hey, Vandy was the better team that day. That doesn't say that they're great, but it says that you're not. You got to stop sleeping on opponents and you got to get it together. That's what the discussion needs to be. Bama fans shouldn't be in denial thinking everything's fine. Bama fans shouldn't think that they suck. And Vandy fans shouldn't think that they're back. This ain't 1924. This is 2024. You ain't back. You never were. I hate to be such a Debbie Downer, but my goodness, the delusion that is swirling around the college football world today is nothing short of unacceptable. Anyway, then we've got Texas A&M. I mentioned them, for the lack of a better word, evaporating the Missouri football program last weekend. 41-10. Mizzou spotted them 34 points before they got on the board. A&M, I owe you an apology. These past couple of weeks, I've been sitting here saying A&M probably shouldn't be ranked. What the heck are they doing ranked? They haven't beaten anyone to earn it. They struggled with Bowling Green just like Penn State did. Why are we giving this team praise for nothing? They're looking good. They beat Arkansas. Arkansas just beat Tennessee. They beat Florida. Florida, I believe, since that game, is unbeaten. Right? I believe I have that right. So A&M's rolling right now. The only loss to their name is a season opener to a highly ranked Notre Dame. And it's not like it was some blowout. You were outplayed, but it wasn't some blowout. A&M dismantling Missouri like this, even if Missouri wasn't a true top 10 team in skill set, that's impressive. A&M jumped up 10 spots. They're top 15. You got to give them credit for that. All righty, let's break down to Floridian representation here. Florida State lost to Clemson 29-13. They are now 1-5 on the year. That matches their worst start through six games since 1975. I will say this game was closer than it should have been. I think Clemson should have ran away with this. My point prediction was 44-10 Tigers. So to only win by two scores with the mistakes Florida State was making is pretty phenomenal. And I will say the offense had brighter moments with Brock Glenn at the helm. He took over this game, and he had some moments where he shined. He tried to make a couple of deep connections, and they just weren't caught. There were a couple back-to-back looking deep. Go long, man. Clemson, their defense got burned, outsmarted, outplayed, hit him right in the hands, and dropped. Florida State's receiving core cannot catch a cold. It is phenomenal how bad they are. I mean, and that's why I was a big DJU guy, because I noticed this stuff and I'm like, hey, DJ's not great, but my goodness, he's better than what people are saying. I mean, I could catch some of these passes. It's just it's terrible just how bad Florida State's receiving core is. So we still had those issues. Of course, along with that, you have a low-scoring offense, only put up 13. You're on a bye this weekend, Florida State. Your season's already half over. I honestly think, dare I say, it's time we start considering the chances that the Noles go 2-10. I am being dead serious. They're 1-5 halfway through the year, so they're already on pace to go 2-10, mathematically. But after this bye week, they go to Duke. Duke's 5-1. You go to Miami after that. Then you have North Carolina, right? Then you go to Notre Dame. Then you have Charleston Southern. There's your second win. And then you host Florida, who's looking better than you. Florida beat UCF by double digits this last weekend. So show me a third game that you are confident Florida State will win. Show it. Show it. Cal, Charleston Southern, and who? I'd love to hear thoughts on that. Florida, by the way, mentioned them just a moment ago. They did exactly what I thought they would. They took advantage of a beat-up UCF. Florida was riding high on a bye, 124-13. Good for them. They look like they're on the come-up. They're heading into Knoxville, though, off back-to-back wins. They're donning a positive record. It's a rivalry, man, and it's a tough one. If this game were in Gainesville, I would look at Tennessee and be like, hey, man, look out. Because you just got humbled by Arkansas, and now you're going to the swamp, and they hungry. But it's back home in Neyland Stadium. Tennessee could be out for blood. They're going to have thousands and thousands of people in there just roaring, ready to go, ready to get back on track against a big rival. That's going to be tough for the Gators to overcome. But we'll touch more on that later. Miami hinted at this, or I didn't hint at it. I flat out said it. They got bailed. They were down 35-10. They squeaked past Cal by a single point, 39-38. And of course, en route to that lead change, we had some questionable officiating. We heard something about, potential targeting that was not called. I think it was reviewed and confirmed, not targeting. So the ball goes back to Miami. I think I got the chronology right here. Miami goes down the field, and then on their lead taking play with under a minute to go, you see a couple of Miami O-linemen run like a few yards down the field to block. And in the business, they call that illegal man downfield or ineligible receiver, yada, 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 whatever, you know, spruce up you want to do on what it's called. There's a guy downfield officially, and he's not supposed to be. That's a penalty. That undoes the play, but the refs didn't catch that. So we've got another week where Miami is squeaking by right at the buzzer against a visibly, or what should be a visibly inferior opponent. If you're a Miami fan and you still refuse to see how fortunate you are to be unbeaten, you're just simply in denial. I look at Miami and I laugh. If you send Miami to Gainesville, Miami just went to Gainesville to start the year and dismantled Florida. You send them back to Gainesville today, I don't know if Miami's winning that game. The Hurricanes are also on a bye this weekend, so here's to hoping they don't need the refs to help them survive that too. UCF, again, mentioned this a few minutes ago, got handled by Florida. They are now 3-2. They host Cincinnati. Cincinnati holds the same record. But after the Bearcats, man, comes back-to-back ranked slash unbeaten opponents in Iowa State and BYU. So in other words, UCF really needs to take this week as an opportunity to right the ship. I don't think Iowa State and BYU are as good as the rankings may imply, but they do have some decent wins. Iowa State is historically inferior to Iowa, but they beat them head-to-head. Showed a good comeback effort in it as well. BYU, they're SMU's only loss, and SMU's made a believer out of me, beating Louisville last week in Kentucky. They're now ranked as well. So these teams aren't total pushovers. UCF, Cincinnati is something to work with, something to take advantage of, because Cincinnati's been struggling just like you have. But, you know, they are while BYU and Iowa State, I don't know why I'm having problems speaking now. I guess because I just can't wrap my head around Iowa State being ranked as high as they are. But Iowa State and BYU, they're pretty tough. While I give them grief for their ranking, they're pretty tough. So take advantage of the Cincinnati game while you can, because they're looking far more your speed right now. Now we have USF. They are coming off a bye. They got embarrassed by Tulane. They host 4-1 Memphis. I think the Bulls could get a win there. If that game happens in Tampa, that's definitely possible. Then we got UWF. I called it. And it was no knock on Mississippi College. I just knew Mississippi College is a struggling program. They have been for such a long time. UWF has demolished them in their short time facing each other. UWF 31-0 over Mississippi College. And that gets their record out of the red. They're now 2-2. They welcome 4-1 Delta State for their homecoming game this weekend. And 4-1 is kind of intimidating, but it's important to note, I think UWF has certainly faced tougher opposition leading up to this point, with guys like West Alabama, who was unbeaten, Grand Valley State. I mean, these aren't pushover teams, man. I'm not saying Delta State's facing, you know, kids, like little boys and girls out there, flag football, but they haven't faced opposition of that caliber yet. So I'll be interested to see if UWF can get the win there, because the record differential is, again, quite misleading. I'd expect the Argos, no matter what, to bring the house down. That's not going to be a blowout either way, regardless of who wins. But speaking of winners, I always have my score predictions for the Florida games and more, starting with USF. I have USF losing this game close, 32-28 to Memphis. As for UWF, I've got them winning their game close, upset. Give me the Argos, 30-27, being a close one here at Penn Air Field in Pensacola. Then I've got Florida at Tennessee. It's not like Florida's going to get dismantled. 48-3. No, we're not going to see anything like that. But 38-20 is the score I've got penciled in here. Give me the Vols big in that one. I think they're going to try to bounce back. They're at home. I think that's going to cover a world of hurt. And I think the Gators are going to get humbled, because while they're doing good and winning the games that they should, by margins that they should, I think that says a lot about their opponents struggling. Mississippi State has struggled. UCF has struggled. So it says a lot about them, not just a lot of good about the Gators, but a lot of bad about the Bulldogs and Knights. Then we got Cincinnati at UCF, speaking of the Knights. I've got them winning, but I've got them winning close. These teams are in the American together. They have the same record, but UCF is at home. I'll give them the edge, 27-21. And here's to hoping you can beat Iowa State. Iowa State's not messing around. UCF's going to have to. But don't look ahead now. As I said, Cincinnati's not some pushover. Not by your standard, at least. So don't sleep on Cincinnati. But they're gonna give you a pretty fair battle before you face the Cyclones. Because, as I said, we can question just how tough they are. At the end of the day, they're unbeaten, and they're a top 12 team. All right, but enough dwelling on that. We'll pass that bridge when we get to it, or cross that bridge, whatever, however the saying goes. All right, some more nationally relevant games here. We've got several, actually. Number one, Texas. Number 18, Oklahoma. The Red River rivalry taking place here. This is always a good game. Well, almost always. We had a blowout a couple years ago, but Oklahoma's gotten better since then. Oklahoma's got a tough defense. Texas. And I think both parties, aren't Texas and Oklahoma both coming off a bye? That's going to be one heck of a game. And not just because of the rivalry implications. I truly believe just as far as the relevance, when you look at the ranking of the teams, they're both top 20 and one of them's top ranked. Oklahoma has been a pain in Texas's side for years. A tough thorn to pull out. I'm going to take Texas, though. I think they do get a convincing win here. Once again, not a blowout. I got Texas 34-16. And then number two, Ohio State. At number three, Oregon. Just numerically, as far as the rankings, this is one of the biggest games of the year. I have Ohio State winning by 10, though. I don't buy Oregon. Neither team has really wowed me, but Oregon has limped to the finish line on a few occasions now. At least Ohio State, unless I'm misremembering, after four quarters, Ohio State has dominated just about everybody they have faced. And that's what they should be doing if they're a contender. So I don't think they're going to dominate Oregon, especially at Autzen Stadium. That's a brutal environment for visitors. But I got to take the Buckeyes here. And I'll take them by, as I said, 10, 37-27. Another big one. Number 9, Ole Miss. At number 13, LSU. If this were in Oxford, I'd take Ole Miss far easier. It's in Death Valley. You want to talk about brutal road environments. My goodness, that's one of the toughest places to play in America. I have the Rebels, but I got them 30-24. Close game. And then I've got another close one. Number 18, K-State at Colorado. I've got an upset here officially, or at least with how it looks on the rankings. Colorado, only a one-loss team. They are unranked. They host K-State. And I think this would knock K-State out of the rankings, and it would definitely send Colorado in. I got the Buffs winning 37-31. Dion, you've made a believer out of me. Your team's been doing all right. You only got one loss this far in the season. Could it be all for naught? Maybe. The latter half of your schedule was supposed to be tougher anyway. And K-State's looked a little bumpy at times, but I don't know. I'm a believer. All right, upset alert. Now, this is where things get really interesting because I've got a couple of high-ranking teams struggling here. It's not like I've got, number 21 struggles. No, these are some high-ranking powers. Starting with number 4 in the nation, Penn State. I told you they haven't wowed me. They go to USC. It's a tough place to play. It is far out of your neck of the woods. USC isn't great, obviously, but they're good and they're well-coached, especially on the offensive side. You give me Lincoln Riley and the Trojans at home, welcoming some cross-country cats who haven't really wowed anyone against anyone. I gotta assume USC can win that game. These are just upset alerts. I'm not saying it's gonna happen. I'm just saying it could. Then we've got number 11, Iowa State at West Virginia. I hate it, man. I feel bad because it's like I've been ragging on Iowa State for like half the show this week. But Iowa State, they just haven't done much for me. Their best looking win was who? Iowa. They had to come back and win the game close. I appreciate the effort in a comeback win, but once again, Iowa's not looking too hot right now, and if you're trying to be a top 12 team, after this week, you could be arguing for a top 10 spot. Man, if you're doing that, I got to see more from you. Comebacks are pretty. Just ask Miami. Miami had a great comeback against Cal, but it doesn't wow me when it's Cal and you're supposed to be some elite power. That's the way I'm looking at Iowa State now. You get looked at like a big dog when you want a ranking like a big dog, when you want to be considered a big dog. Iowa State goes to Morgantown. It's at night. West Virginia is coming in there, coming back home after back-to-back wins. That is not easy by any stretch of the imagination. Kirk Herbstreit, I think, took Penn State to beat West Virginia in their season openers, but he acted like the only reason he did was because they weren't playing in Morgantown at night. Now they are. Look out, Cyclones. This has been the College Try Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Price, every Tuesday night on ESPN Pensacola, on our local podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com. We'll see you next week, and we're going to have a lot more to talk about after that if you have not noticed. We'll see you next week. Take care, everybody.